It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, welcome back to Caffeinated Connections with your host, Caleb McCartney. As you hear in the background, we got our guests from the wonderful band, the one, the only, Dream the Heavy.
Cards, please.
You'd be surprised. We don't have captions on this, or time cards, right? Got these two wonderful people from Dream the Heavy, and it is a pleasure to have them on. How are you guys doing?
Pleasure to be here. Caleb, how did we meet? Do you want to tell them?
Well, it was quite, no pun intended, a shot in the dark. I ended up photographing them at Haven. If you guys don't know what Haven is, it's a wonderful venue that you can go out, listen to some music on a weekend, and some wonderful bands played. And play for everyone. And it is, what, like 10 bucks? 15
like
bucks?
10, 15 bucks. The people at Haven are friends of ours within the music scene as well. And to have that represented, have them representing the community in and of itself is pretty special. It's not something that you normally would get anywhere in any large city. And once again, it just showcases how important Pittsburgh is and how it is able to curate art and music in a way that is unique and just to ourselves and just to within our community. So to have Haven there, to have you represent with your photography, and there was a ton of photographers there that evening. The bands were wonderful. Quick shout out to Eli of Wild Blue Yonder, to Zoltan and
Sue. Him.
And to Benito. Benito did a great job. So, yes, yeah, we had probably easily one of our most memorable shows that night. And we were very fortunate to have you there with your eye to capture a lot of that. So thank you. And, yes, that's how we met. And I know that yourself and TK have fostered a nice little relationship going forward. So I'm honored to be here and being able to witness what's going to be going on.
And the guy that just talked, on the podcast episode, you'll see a picture of him probably pulled from one of my photos of him looking like really rad with the beard and all that. And then I'll throw TK in as well.
Yeah. Yep. That'd be nice.
But yeah, yeah, you don't want too much showboating.
No, not too many people like to look at TK. It's... They like to stare at TK. It's not a glance. It's
more of a basilisk kind of like a Medusa thing.
Oh, yeah.
It is not.
What? Cotton headlights.
Quite literally, that one girl that I got a photo of, that she was right underneath you, TK. Right underneath you. She looked like she was caught in the headlights, but she was not moving.
That was a very lively audience.
Green crowd. Yeah. Good connections that night.
Absolutely.
Like connecting to the crowd. It was a wonderful space, man.
Which is the most important thing too. With Dream the Heavy, that's one of our main things, is to connect to the crowd. So there's no barrier between art and community. We want everybody to come in and hug and just kind of like and to love on one another, because that's where everything feels special.
Well, it's true.
That's what Pittsburgh is, the city of brotherly love, or is that?
That's Philadelphia. We're staking.
We're so close.
What is it? We're also what the city with the most bridges, even though that they say Paris is, we have three more than them.
Boom.
Yeah, Parisians.
Pittsburgh does have a lot of love. The artist community in Pittsburgh has always been fantastic. It's always I've always said that it's a playground where they want you to come in and play. It's not a competition. It's, oh, you do this too? Oh, you have to meet. Oh, you should show here. Oh, I got to turn you on to this. You should. And so the more you go out into the arts in Pittsburgh, you'll start seeing the same people. And you'll start seeing this great community that stems back for decades. And that's the other thing. When I first moved here for the arts, I noticed that there was no age barrier. It was, and the only thing that connected was intellect. You connected to the intellect and the interest. And everybody came in on an equal playing field. It was wonderful. It is wonderful.
It is wonderful. Respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lived in San Francisco as well. And I, when we moved out there, I was looking for that same love. And it was definitely more competition out there. Great art, good people, but you had to break through to get to the people. It was definitely a competition. It was business out there.
There's a lot of I'm from there, so I'll speak on it. It's a lot of backstabbing, but it's a friendlier way. It's competitive, but in order to get noticed and in order to get into the places that really matter, you have to push yourselves endlessly. Not unlike what you have to do here, but it's a little bit more it's much more venomous. Here there's an amount of care and an amount of admiration for everybody who's a creative.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on a much larger loving scale. I grew up there. It's where I'm from. I love San Francisco. I love the East Bay. I love Oakland, but I've never been as well received as I have been since moving here.
Oh yeah, as a Cali kid, I mean, I completely understand that. Trying to break through, I mean, I was still an artist, but I was a Play-Doh artist, you know. Mm-hmm. I took it back to the Play-Doh days of being 8 years old and doing that in Legos, probably. So I really wasn't the artist, so there was a lot more competition out there. But even just looking at LA, looking at San Jose and all these other mm-hmm. places, breaking through that barrier of entry is so much harder than Pittsburgh.
It's uninviting. And I think that's what Pittsburgh is it's willing to receive you for who you are and for what you can create, as opposed to what you can give me, what you can do for me.
Ooh,
so nice. It's, and this is coming from me. I am born and raised there. That is my home. I love the East Bay immensely. I have family, I have friends, I have enemies, I have people there that I will cherish and love and respect forever. And they're still struggling. And most of them had to just stop because it got to a point to where either it wasn't making money, they fell out of favor as far as like popularity, the venues change so often, and it just becomes difficult. That being said, I'll always love it. I'll always respect it. I feel far more welcomed and appreciated within the Pittsburgh community because I could just be me. There was always like, you know, there was always a clique involved, and I became really susceptible to it, and I immersed myself into that. And looking back in a retrospective manner, I realized that me trying to be cool, I was really not. I was just absolutely swamped in just being, how can I put this?
You cared more about the audience than yourself?
I didn't care about the audience.
Oh.
I didn't care. It was great to have it there.
Tribe?
But it wasn't even the tribe. You know what it was? It was me trying to prove that I was worthy.
Okay.
And I feel like that's San Francisco in a nutshell is just always out there trying to prove yourself. And when you do, then everybody kind of, you get bought out. Whereas I feel like within Pittsburgh, there's more of a, what's the word I'm looking for, TK?
Je ne sais.
Je ne sais, well, a little thing I don't know what. A little, I don't know what.
I don't know. The sourdough bread is really sour in San Francisco. I don't mind being salty in Pittsburgh.
The thing that I find often is you will get a little bit of clickiness in Pittsburgh, but at the end of the day, it is very... I mean, the way I look at Pittsburgh is it's like the heartthrob that isn't toxic.
Mm. Respect.
It's a genuine love for one another. And when you find that crew, it's not only come on in, it's come on in, have a biscuit, have a chicken leg, and we're going to send you home with food as well.
Yes.
Yep. Bros used to go for everything.
Bros used to go. That's kind of like how our that is exactly how our experience at Haven was. Mm. So to kind of, you know, come full circle on that. Certainly go to that place, and it's really nice to see musicians support one another like that and that and within that fashion as well.
It's the most counter competitive environment where it's not competitive at all, and it's like, holy crap, you're sitting there in a green room and it's like everyone's just kind of vibing totally. And hanging out and having a good time, and it's not
playground.
Like quite literally the playground, you know, go back to kindergarten. It's, you know, who the fuck cares who you are?
Okay, he said it. Or they said it. And so I was I wanted to see who was going to break the hymen first.
Thank you, Salem.
It is explicit.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, so
here it comes.
No, I'm going to hold back. My children may listen to this, and I don't need them to learn new curse words. but yeah, you nailed it perfectly. You absolutely.
I mean, it. No one should really care who you are as long as you're not an asshole. Mm. And when it comes to like, music. I mean, I was a musician in middle school when I had a lead pencil band. When I would tap the pen and annoy the hell out of my what is it? Spanish? No, not Spanish. We hated her. She was a math topics teacher. Mm. Honestly, it wasn't geography that I hated. I hated geometry. Mm. And she was very big. She's like, the area. I said, I really don't give a fuck what area you have. And we would annoy the hell out of her by tapping our lead pencil and just doing it so fast or so loud. So that that little twang. It really brought out her rage, and it was...
The lead pencil band.
It was the lead pencil band, and it was so worth it, and...
Lead pencil rebellion.
Is that the... that was the Ticonderoga players, right? I think that's what that was.
Oh, the lead pencil rebellion. That's and the newest band coming to a city near you.
Let's hope not.
Maybe they can sell it all.
Our competition.
But no, I mean, the art, whether you're playing lead pencils or just starting out art very early on, whether you're 8 years old listening to this or you're 62, I think art is this way of coping with reality.
Mm-hmm.
Literally it is the human condition put into something.
Correct.
True.
I mean, and that's another thing why robots can't do it.
That's correct.
Do you feel... with the whole AI thing coming around, that is just a little, even with their flaws, I feel like when humans make flaws within art, it still has a organic appeal. And I think that's my main thing with AI, is that it just doesn't have that...
organic flaw?
That organic flaw. And I think if they could, I'm not going to give anybody any ideas. But
an AI, I mean, I'm listening to you.
Yeah, I think organic flaws are worth it, whether it's in painting, sculpture, music, in any sort of art. I think that is absolutely necessary. I believe the pursuit of perfection is drastically overrated. My art, my creative has always been primarily music. Growing up, listening to the really poorly mixed, half-eaten cassette tapes by the Dead Kennedys or even by Public Enemy, it made me appreciate that. Because your tape could get eaten up at any minute, mm-hmm. It was also temporary. You didn't know how long you had with that sort of thing, which I think is an important thing of art, too, is like it is temporary within you because you will move on. You will find another avenue for that. I could just go on all day about
it. Fosters growth.
It does foster growth.
You make a good point because that's another thing that I, like at 16, 17 years old, I came to the terms that I couldn't listen and hear and read everything that I could in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh my God, what should I listen to? And you're having this midlife crisis of
16?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Well, you got to realize too, being raised with the Library of Alexandria in your pocket, I didn't really wrap my brain around that. What you're saying, you can have this existential crisis of, I could only hold so much information. Mm-hmm. I only have so much time. I have access to everything. How do I spend my time? That's pretty brilliant. It's really brilliant, and I'm impressed that you even had this moment.
Like, the thing is, since then, has been nothing but intentional pursuit of...
Brilliant.
Not even just an intentional pursuit of knowledge, but an intentional curiosity of knowledge, of new things. So what I actually do is I ask a friend for a playlist that's so different from mine every year, and I say, give me your music. And I listen to that, whether I hate it so much, and I don't understand what they're saying, because I learned about techno neo pop.
Okay.
And it's an entirely different genre. And there's King Lizard and the Seven Wizard, or
King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard. That's... felt like that. They're there. They're there. They're them and Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats are is kind of like what I'm kind of gravitating around. But I digress. Go ahead.
But no, when it comes to like, you have to, I think that when it comes to consuming something in the modern age, we have the Library of Alexandria in our pocket. And there's two ways of thinking that kind of two people, I cannot quote them, but there's one thinking that there's too much information, so I don't want to interact with any of it. Or there's, I don't know which one is right, which one's correct. Mm. So I don't know where to go. So it's the paralysis by analysis, mm-hmm. or it's you're so overwhelmed that you don't want to pick one, so you don't pick any. And it's a problem, because I can't imagine these kids that are, I don't think we prepare the next generation for what is accessible.
I've witnessed, having kids of my own, I've witnessed my teenage daughter go in circles in and around music, in and around theater, in and around movies, plays. It seems to be, and this could be just an influence of what I have over her, and I'm not attributing that, but she gravitates to the same stuff at her age that I did when I was a little older than what she is now.
In your jeans.
She was, well, I mean, the things she's listening to and the things that she's creating are things that speak to her. And I find that that is exactly what spoke to me. And I'm certain that that energy and then that chaos spoke to my parents. So I think there's avenues there. So yes, analysis paralysis is like the worst thing you can have as a musician.
Or an artist.
However, I think if you can answer what's put in front of you and allow the universe to kind of direct you and channel you through these things, then it becomes easier. And if you have friends like you have, and you're willing to experiment, and you're willing to step outside of the box and not be so boxed in with perfection, and embrace something that makes you uncomfortable, holy shit, are you gonna grow?
Not only grow, but you're gonna benefit.
You're gonna benefit from it. And I think that's what makes a lot of musicians, a lot of artists. I think that is the sun that creates the photosynthesis for us to grow.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
In all of this overwhelming ability to access the all, at the same time, you need a counterbalance. And there's more Eastern philosophy being integrated into our world in the Western society than ever.
Thank goodness.
And so, through this, as this onslaught comes, if you can be conscious of your breath, be conscious of what your heart's doing, be conscious of where that, and your emotions are your barometer. And that's the only way to weed out all the bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You really have to just breathe, calm, get that static. Find a way to remove the static, because there's more static than ever. Mm-hmm. But everybody is their own
aligns at their own frequency and resonance and their own little radio station, if you will. They pick up and they align with what comes naturally. So if you can get all that static out of the way, you can really focus in on your path by your little beacons that are being thrown to you, you know, and keep growing and keep growing. And be conscious of all the things that there's nothing wrong. There's no bad. There's, you know, just it's just information. So the things that make you upset, great. Know why they make you upset. The things that make you, you know, erotic, know why it makes you erotic. I mean, all of these things, follow your bliss, like Joseph Campbell said. But nothing is wrong. Just it's all information. Mm-hmm. Breathe through it and keep moving forward. Like you said, got to move past that analysis paralysis.
When it comes, you mentioned like this idea of going past the static. What I've found often is we sometimes get stuck in these rooms of TV static. Mm-hmm. And we surround ourselves with these rooms of TV static because sometimes it's more chaos is easier if we're used to it. And so how I'm sure we've all encountered that. How have you both kind of gotten away, tried to reconstitute this familiarity of static and try to go away from it and find healthier avenues?
You make mistakes.
Allow the mistakes.
You allow the mistakes. You can, as much as you want to bypass and get to the positive, you have to stumble. You have to do that. So the static in itself is just as important as the clarity.
Right. So this is chaos magic we're talking about.
Chaos is fantastic.
There it is.
Yeah.
It's all the realm of possibilities. But it's funny, growing up when I, there were literally, there was a television on in every room. And if there wasn't a television on in the room, there was a radio on. And it's really fascinating. So much so that when I started living on my own, I needed to fall asleep to television because it was my comfort. And because that was my sign that somebody else was alive in the house, was if I heard a TV on in the other room. It's really fascinating. And like I psychoanalyzed this.
I think a lot of my generation still deal with that because the thing was, when I was younger, I had to have a TV on and fall asleep to.
Right.
I need like pitter patter of a cat or something, because there's something weird in our current society where silence is scary.
It's deafening.
It's quite literally deafening. And there is something that I have learned recently with no longer being in a relationship of there is peacefulness in silence.
Mm.
And as a photographer, there's the dark room where you quite literally are in the dark. And there's a story here that so when I started the darkroom, I was so confident. I was prideful. I thought I was hot shit. And I go into the darkroom. I'm the first one in. I have the film in my camera. And I'm like, I'm going to do this first try. This is going to be easy. 10 minutes flat. Mm-hmm. It wasn't 10 minutes.
No.
4 hours later.
It wasn't 10 minutes. It was about an hour. Mm-hmm. This was literally, I was in the darkroom. And this was right after a breakup. Mm-hmm. And holy shit. I was in that dark room. It felt like a century. And not only that, but you can't give up. You're in the dark. You open that door.
It's done.
That is a failure. That is a true failure.
Yeah.
So being able to work through your failure in the literal dark and trying not to beat yourself up as an artist, this is an art. You know, you took these photos. You cared so much. You cared so deeply about this. And, you know, you're like, I'm a hot shit. I can do this. And you're in there alone with your camera. And you can't see anything, and you can only feel. Mm. So one to two of your senses are turned off. The silence is quite literally deafening. And I remember sitting there with the film in my hand, and I do know what I'm doing, but I didn't know what I was doing, to where I had to calm myself and realize, oh, well, I just do this. And looking at things from a logical standpoint as to an emotional standpoint is where it starts. Because I can tell you, being in a room, a dark room, alone for that long, maybe it wasn't an hour, but it felt like days.
It felt like an hour, yeah.
And you start to realize, holy shit, this is not that big of a deal. But I think often our minds will go to a point where it's panic. We will panic because we are afraid of that uncomfortableness, that daunting fear that we're alone and that we have to figure it out all on ourselves. And we do have to do it all on ourselves.
Yep.
And that's the fun of adulting. That's what I found out.
Yeah. Fear is the unknown, you know, and if the more tools you have to get through that, like you said, you know, that you can just rely on for the moment. Who was it that said, what the treasure you seek most lies in the cave that you fear most? You know, it's like you have to go in literally to that silence. You have to remove yourself from everything you know so that you can get to what you were born knowing and get back to yourself. And that's what every religion talks about, that rebirth into self, you know, rebirth and rebirth and rebirth, you know, dying and living, dying while living, dying while living. You know, it's what we kind of do, especially as artists.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, every what?
And that, I think that's actually like yeah. I think that's why artists stay well, it's an impulsive bliss, and you know, cuz you're constantly killing yourself and dying, you know, and rebirth, and you're trying new things. So you're always young at heart because nothing is ever good enough, because it's good enough now it's not, because you've conquered it. And now the next dragon to slay and the next shedding of the skin. It's a life of fascination.
And curiosity as well, because I think
it's how to stay young.
I mean, not only that,
be fascinated with life.
I think that's the thing that a lot of people talk about, where it's like, oh, you know, if the kid dies in you, the younger kid that you are at heart, if that dies, then, you know, kiss the rest of your life goodbye, as I usually say, because it's like, you have to have this childish sense of curiosity and wonder. And we have to make sure that we balance that with the naivety of that child, where sometimes we go in and we think one thing and we have to humble ourselves. And sometimes it bites us in the ass, quite literally.
Yep.
It's good. It's good. This is the strangest life I've ever known, and I wouldn't trade it for... Wouldn't trade it for the world.
No. And you mentioned, you know, staying young. I think a lot of people, like everyone I've talked to, they're like, guess how old he is? And everyone's just like 30, 20. You're not, are you?
No, you could add those together. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been inhabiting this body for over half a century.
That's, I don't understand.
And I look to inhabit it for another.
Another 50.
And then a couple more bodies.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I do know how you do it as an artist. I mean...
We just explained it.
Yeah. It really... It's... You know, being an artist isn't something that you just want to be when you grow up. You just are. I just think you just...
It's a blessing and a curse.
Quite literally.
The body will die before the artist does.
Quite literally. You know,
You never retire from what you love.
No. You know, there's people who lose an ability, that lose an ability to create. They just go on, they find another medium to it. So, and that's what a creative person will do. If you lose your eyes, maybe you go back into music. If I lose my hands, perhaps I go into photography, or I do something. We will always find something. And the fortunate thing is with technology and everything that has advanced, we can always find an outlet for that. So yeah, the creative side that is directly linked to the hopeful youth energy within you is something that will pass on and pass along long after the flesh is gone. Is that a Johnny Cash lyric?
It's Ministry, After the Flesh.
Is that After the Flesh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After the Flesh.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right, Caleb. That's something that just doesn't diminish. The desire to be heard, the desire to be seen as a creative person, regardless of your medium and regardless of your whatever, that doesn't go away. And I think that's why a lot of people who inhabit that light and that energy leave a little early, because sometimes it's overwhelming. And to compensate for success, to compensate for anxieties, we turn to things that are detrimental to the human form. So with the longevity thing, and speaking on, you know, TK and myself, we're certainly in that half century thing. And people are, especially with TK, are mesmerized and astonished when they find out how long he's been around.
They said that it's unfair.
They could do it too.
That's what I was gonna get at. It's like, you know, be that's, you know, be a that's how to lead, is just show possibilities.
Yeah,
like every artist that I've always been mesmerized with, every musician, every sculptor, every painter, anyone who considered themselves an artist, dance, poetry, they show you that it's possible, because it didn't exist until they were the conduit for it. And it already existed, you know, that, to be honest with you. That's why I say, like, inhabiting this form. You know, everything exists. It just needs plucked from the ether.
Well, self-actualization.
Self-actualization. And I think people who...
That, too. But every artist, we're all conduits to it.
Yeah.
And if we're all, like, radio stations to it. It's what do you bring and what do you share as proof to pudding, baby?
I think a lot of it has to be attributed to how happy you are with what you're able to do,
yeah,
as well.
True.
Because if you're always pursuing the next thing, the next thing, next thing, and you're not completely happy with what you've done before, and allow that to kind of be what it is with all its mistakes, then you become a cannibal and you start to literally eat yourself away. The art part of you starts to eat itself away, and that starts to go. And then you become a thief, because then you're trying to just replicate and steal from what you were in your experiences prior. Therefore, you have to be able to leave you have to be able to leave those footprints behind in order to continue. And you will find new and more adventurous things. So in order to progress, and in order to stay and to have a good longevity at doing these things, you have to be willing to say goodbye to a few things as well. And I think saying goodbye to that allows you to grow. It allows your body to replenish. It allows your spirit to go. And it keeps you loose. Because once you start to get too rigid, then that's when you start to atrophy. Your creative spark starts to dwindle. That's where you lose yourself.
That's a good point.
And you make a very good point, and I was going to get into it. It's a perfect transition.
Cool.
From when it comes to being an artist, we're going to get into a creative rut. That shit happens.
Yeah.
And you make a very good point. That is literally what you're describing, this idea of you're making, you're in a good flow, and then all of a sudden you hit not only a curb, but you're just kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to lose a part of yourself.
Yes.
How do you guys work through a creative rut? Because, I mean, I'd love to talk on that too, but I'd love to hear your guys' point.
Sure. Do you have something?
Cause I have one thing. You mentioned it before. You find comfort in the silence. When you find comfort in the silence, then you hear what's being said to you.
Yes. So once you start realizing that the creative process is like breathing, and you need to, and there's a pause, and you bring it in, and then you gestate, and then you release. But there's always those moments afterwards. It's the seasons. You need that downtime. You burn too quickly. You burn out. You have to have that replenishment. So when those so-called creative ruts or writer's block, if you allow yourself to rest, all of those, you know, everything that you planted and put out there, those seeds are in the air. They're going to come and land again if you just stop blowing hot air and just let it settle. Just let it settle. They'll hit the soil again, and they're going to spring anew. Shit you couldn't even imagine, because at some point, you do have to listen. You have to open your eyes to what's around you again, because it's so easy to get wrapped up into what your creative spirit, what you're birthing. It's so fun. Oh, it's intoxicating.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I'm not that, I have a very, if I didn't have to leave the studio, I wouldn't. I have a very happy home life. My studio is in my house.
My family's in my house. It's great. The band comes now to the studio. Mm-hmm. Like, if I didn't have to leave the mothership, I wouldn't, except to share.
Yeah.
But so I could, I do fall prey to not leaving my studio. But there's those moments you have to allow yourself to rest. You have to allow yourself to sleep when you need to sleep so that you can wake up and birth again, these Indras, you know, is sleep and birth, sleep and birth.
Oh, that's a huge thing, just sleep. I just learned that myself after, you know, the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, like I graduate in 2 weeks and it's,
nice.
It's
exciting and scary.
Not only that, but I had my thesis last week and.
Which I was privy to be at, and it was, the work looked fantastic.
Thank you.
Oh man, as soon as you came up the steps, your work was right there and it set everything up. It was beautiful. Andy would have been proud. It's just gorgeous work. And so it tapped into our time as well. And your write-up was great. So congratulations on a beautiful thesis.
There's,
you achieved it.
Thank you. I truly appreciate it. It's, you know, I've talked about it briefly but on the podcast, but really, you know, that has been nothing but anxiety because it's, you know, you're making a work not because you want to share it, not only because you want to share it with others, but you're afraid of its reception and you're afraid of, you know, what. Because at the end of the day, art and culture, art influences culture, culture influences art.
Sure.
So the thing is as we jump into it, the work itself is very poignant. It's very culminative of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary because not only do I think it's good because I'm very prideful of it, but I had sleepless nights because of it. Because there is this, you know, this... you know, prove yourself kind of mentality, even when you're a college student, you know,
well, you got to your professor, especially you're there's numbers going to come after it. You know what I mean? You're going to be graded on it. So you have one judge.
Yeah.
That lives outside of yourself now.
Yeah.
That you have to win over. You have to win yourself first. And then you have to win over this one judge. It's, I still have school anxieties. I went to art school and I have school anxiety.
Far more fearful. Then am I going to be accepted? Because did you feel like you had to with the anxiety and everything that built around that and producing your thesis and having a specific person to kind of impress and to judge you upon that, when you've created art in other instances, did you feel like your thesis was far more stressful? And do you think that, and second part, do you think that that stress propelled you to push yourself into a more creative position?
Initially, it wasn't what the thesis started out me trying to prove a point, and it was an entirely different point. But what I realized, it was less about proving a point to others and more about me.
Congratulations.
And
that's beautiful.
And it's the process during it was staring me in the face because I was, you know, I woke up, wanted to be at an event at a rally, and I was like during politics, and I said, "What the fuck? Why not? Why not?" And I kept doing it. And I missed multiple classes, and it was like, it was so weird. Hey, can I get class off? I'm going to Obama's rally, and I'm gonna be taking photos of him. I know it sounds like an excuse, but like I am.
Yeah.
And I just did all this, at a certain point, I got to a reflection where I sit in the car and I'm like driving miles and hours just to cross my fingers and hope that I get in, hope that I do this. And it wasn't to prove myself. It wasn't, there was no anxiety there. It was, what the fuck? This is fucking crazy. I can do it. And eventually I started to kind of come to terms with myself of like, I don't have to prove shit to anyone. And none of us do. None of us have to prove shit to anyone aside from ourselves of who the hell are you and what are you waiting for?
Worthy. That was something that Paul mentioned earlier of the anxiety in the arts community in the Bay Area that he felt, am I worthy? And that's something that, you know, I've been trying to come to grips with in my adult life. And I've saw them through the silence and through affirmations in the silence. for it to have self-esteem, because I learned later in life that I had crippling anxiety over my own self-esteem. And so learning that is what propels art in an honest fashion. The realization of, because you can conceive it, it's worthy. Because it hits you, your barometer this way, your emotional barometer this way, your bliss factor, that's what makes it worthy. And what's fascinating is you start realizing that you are the only one ever to experience it this way. And if you're strong enough to share your only ever moment with others, good on you. That's worthy. That is life worthy. That's what we all strive for. Some people do it through children.
Yeah.
We're artists. We birth children on a daily basis. So good on you. And they're worthy.
To tag on to that, I feel I playing in Dream the Heavy, that is what I think the collective consciousness of all five of us is. Let's give what we have in our unique way in order to share it so everybody else can experience their unique way of experiencing us. So that way it just becomes this just wonderful thing. It just becomes
quite a cycle.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest mission of what we are as a band, is to make it, not to make sure, but to give our best effort in order to bring everybody in, to not exclude anybody. There are so many wonderful humans of every religion, gender, and everybody. We want everybody. But I just kind of want the cool people myself, though, too. I kind of want, you know, the people.
No assholes allowed.
I'm kind of over it. I'm really over it. I want people there who can put things in perspective and realize that this is our moment. This is what we do. We want you to be with us. That's kind of the Dream the Heavy mission, spearheaded by TK, but also our keyboard player, myself, our drummer, our guitar player, and even the person who's filling in for our guitarist right now. It really is a collective to where we just want to hug. We don't want to alienate. We just want people to put aside their bullshit and open their mind to an avenue where they're out, where they're not. How could I say this? Put away the horse shit. Put away your fucking ego.
There it is.
Fucking
allow.
Be. Let's
be human.
Let's just all have that energy. Let's all have that
vulnerability.
Isn't that such a beautiful word?
Yep.
It is that vulnerability I think there's a huge thing, not even just I know there is this fear of vulnerability in our current society, especially the Western world.
Oh, yeah. That's changing. I think it's changing. I mean, like, right now, it's so in your face.
I really hope this is the death rattle of it.
That I think it's the death rattle of it. I really do. It is like the death rattle of restrictions, of misogyny, of just restrictions, duality.
Yeah.
I think the realization that duality is bullshit and doesn't exist, this is the death rattle.
You make a very, I love this quote. I'm going to coin it myself. Binary bullshit.
Binary bullshit.
And it's this idea that things are never going to be yes or no. It's a spectrum of things.
And it should be. If everybody is allowed, okay, if everybody stays, this is it, what they were born as, these are all perfect shaped cogs to an amazing machine that nature has built. If everybody just stays exactly who they're born as, wow, they all fit together and solve all the problems by being exactly who they are.
But that's perfectionism.
That's allowing somebody to be born and stay as their unique self. Learn from each other, work together, but please share your self, the self, into the all. Anyway, instead of tribalism and not enough, or, you know, snowflake and all this bullshit, that's duality, and that's really restricting the human spirit, you know, that is only here for a hot minute. You know, we aren't these bodies. We are our consciousness. This is just a moment for our consciousness. So
yeah, you typically get 73 revolutions. Yeah. Why are you wasting that time?
Yeah, like you're worrying about somebody
listening
else
to this. Why are you wasting your time?
Yeah,
why are you wasting your time on being boxed in and being so rigid and so just stoic? Like, this is the way. This is...
be the Tao.
Yeah, you know, in a river, you have water and you have rocks. One of my best friends, Kamal, put this to me: in the river, you have water and you have rock. I choose to flow.
Yes, yes.
I choose to keep moving. I choose to not stay and collect sediment and collect moss. I choose to continue to go and to prosper and to find other avenues and other channels. That is my thought process and has been since Kamal has brought it up to me. So meeting TK reassures me that I'm doing well by being water. My wife reassures me that I'm doing well by being water. I get to see my children. My children reassure me. Meeting people like yourself reassures me that it's perfect to be the water. You know, the rock just kind of sits there. And it's cool, and it's heavy, and it's grounding. But the spirit isn't supposed to be that.
It's affected by everything else.
It's affected by... Thank you. Thank you. And to tag on to what we were saying, we want everybody to be involved with us, and that's the driving factor of being able to create with these five people. Is we all have different avenues, we all have different experiences, we all have different genres, and we all have different mindsets, but to have everybody come in and have a collective that comes together to work towards this is nothing short of remarkable. And to be able to get on podcasts and to be able to talk to people in the audience and become more than just the relationship of an artist or a musician and an audience member. We want family. When I say, hey, come to a next show and say hi, God damn it. Come fucking say hi. Come say hi. We're not people that are going to be like, we're not going to scoot you away. We want to know how you've been. We want to know what's creating you. We are very genuinely interested. And to some people that it's hard to, because there's that anxiety and that fear that we're not going to accept you. We're going to fucking accept you. it's a beautiful situation that we're in as far as a creative collective. So the more people we can bring into this, and the more it can become yours too. It's not unto ourselves. The whole cliche of like, once you release a song, it no longer belongs to you, it belongs to the world. That is absolutely true with every piece of art. Because everybody's going to interpret it their own way. Everybody's going to move in their own way. So to kind of bring it all back, come say hi.
Yeah.
Come be with us. You are welcome. You are worthy of love. You are worthy of everything that you possibly want. So I feel fortunate enough to have somebody who reminds me on a weekly or daily basis that's what it is. So I you know, thank you to TK. My wife does it as well. So I'm very fortunate to have that. And I hope that folks listening have somebody there in order to kind of
reassure,
but also if you don't, say hi to us. Yeah. We want to see other people's art. And I think if you talk to the majority of other people we've played with or performed with, they'll say the same thing. You know, it's something we put out there. Yeah. I don't know. Damn.
Come to Pittsburgh.
Come to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, come to Pittsburgh.
Come to Pittsburgh.
We'll have the next summer of love.
Yeah.
You know, it was San Francisco, and now it's Pittsburgh.
Here we are. One last question for
sure.
You both. What is your guys' preferred caffeinated beverage, as I guess, you know, the scientists call it? Or what is it, your preferred way of caffeinating yourself or getting up?
Yes. I love caffeine. Coffee in the morning. I don't mind an energy drink if I need it. I like matcha. I like yerba mate. I like caffeine. I like the stimulant.
Was it something that you always got into, or was it just, well, everyone else is doing it?
Yes.
I learned coffee in college. I learned coffee actually in Pittsburgh more than Baltimore. Now that I think about it,
I was drinking coffee as a child. I was as my grandmother was sitting around the table smoking cigarettes. I was just sipping coffee, and I grew fond of black coffee.
Oh,
really, really quick. I love the stuff. It's horrendous, but it works. And then as time went on, I found other things that were a little bit stronger than coffee. But that's always been my kind of go to. I do love a freshly brewed espresso as well.
Not like the Starbucks bullshit, right?
Starbucks coffee.
Burnt beans.
And Subway sandwiches. They have the same kind of vibe where everything tastes the same and it all tastes like the packaging. The Starbucks cups has a particular smell and the coffee tastes like that.
They'll never sponsor me. I always
I don't want Starbucks.
I don't want them either.
No. I don't want Subway to sponsor me either. Well, there was a thing where this guy was sponsored by Subway at one point.
You know that rude.
No, I like caffeine. I enjoy caffeine. There's times where I am very liberal with it. But yeah, I coffee. Coffee's
any specific brand, like local?
You know what? I loved Black Forge when it was here. Oh. Black Forge coffee was incredible. Grim Wizard's good. I did like Zeke's. But I'm not too versed on what is local right now. The one coffee, there's a Catfight coffee. My wife has a subscription to it, and it's delicious. I also do enjoy Pete's Alameda Roast, which I found was the town that I, between Alameda and Oakland, were the town that I grew up in. And so Pete's coffee made a specific Alameda blend. It reminds me of that. It takes me back to that. TK makes a great cup of coffee.
Yeah.
There's something that TK does where he throws in, let me try to remember, cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. Cayenne, French press.
Cinnamon, cayenne, mm-hmm. turmeric,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of ginger.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sometimes will put like a, is it almond milk or oat milk?
Coconut milk or, chocolate almond.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And a coriander.
TK's partner also does it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's health benefits to turmeric and to ginger root and to cinnamon. It's like really, if I'm going to do it.
Where something I started putting in my smoothies lately too is the kind of getting into that
good
frame of mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yep. 100%.
Do you get, where do you get your grounds? Your grounds?
To be honest, no. So, to answer the question, I've been doing a lot of matcha lately, and literally I get what I can, and I drink matcha with throughout the day with in coconut milk and some monk fruit just to sweeten it, and ginger root. But espresso, no, I get those. It's nothing local, unfortunately, but it's that awesome classic yellow brick, that Italian yellow brick that you see in the grocery store.
Cafe Bustelo?
Yeah.
That is glorious.
So that's what I make. Yeah. Yes.
It is good.
It
worked like, perfect.
Right. So that's what I use. But then, I add a big spoonful of natural cacao and...
bitter stuff, right? That's the...
It's real bitter. Espresso. Yeah. But then I add the cacao and I doctor it.
So you don't have the...
You want to taste?
Yeah, sure.
It's...
There you go.
So that is cinnamon, cacao... That brick, and a little.
That's not sweet. I don't think the sweet heads at Starbucks like that. Hey, they would not.
No,
but
no,
it's
that's
pretty
sweet
good
to me.
Does Miss Mundock procure these for you as well?
No, I do this.
You do this.
I do this, and I share that. So that's so
fairly good.
She doesn't do the espresso the same way. I overdo mine. Hers, I keep simple with the cacao and the chocolate. Mm-hmm. You know, do a little mocha. She's been getting into the espresso more. She doesn't do the matcha. She doesn't really like that. But as far as the French press that I'd make at home, that I make it for the house.
Do you combine the espresso with the matcha?
I have just out of
matcha
necessity. I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a matcha cat. Yeah. I had
dirty matcha.
I'll do that with yerba mate as well.
I don't even know what these things that you're saying.
Yerba mate is like that. It's more like quadriceps are involved with it. I think a little bit too. But
hey, we're hyper scientific over here, aren't we?
You brought up caffeine.
Remember that his answer was yes.
Yes.
Just yes.
The fact that, I went from blowing rails to drinking coffee. I've done pretty well in my regression. So I think I'm doing better now. But yeah, I honestly, black coffee is just like, it's the one for me. Unless, if we do have a show though, I have been known to sip on the,
whatever he's got. Do you have a name for it?
The monk. The monk.
Monk.
Or monk.
The monk. Monk juice.
Monk juice.
Maybe.
Worked on that.
Drink on that. I don't think I'm going to be drinking on that so much. If it's good.
You know, there is one thing that I learned that I think I did invent.
Uh-huh.
And I would bring it to when we would travel and do shows in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I would pack up a bunch of little jars, old jelly jars. Mm-hmm. And it was matcha with ginger root in orange juice. It is so GD good, man.
Really?
Yes. Matthias would always drink them, these shots. Yeah, it's matcha and orange juice with ginger root. It's very kind of like Mandarin kind of vibe.
Nice.
It's really, really good. And I thought it was something that other people did, but apparently people don't. So that is a TK Monk special.
That is the monk juice.
That's the monk juice, the flow.
And before we go, I wanted to ask if you want to break down a lyric from
you have one.
Flame. So one of my it is one of the favorites on the charts. So,
okay.
It's didn't I start the fire? What does the whole song really kind of, what is it about?
That one is the song on the album that I didn't write the lyrics to.
So
it's Greek mythology.
Sometimes when we write, we're very fortunate to where when we jam, TK will do a free form.
So I scat wording, words.
Scat words. And so Sully, our drummer, took those particular scats and put lyrics to it. But I do believe didn't I
was I think was originally scatted.
Yeah, I think it was like so.
Yeah, I asked Sully about that. It's about Greek mythology. There's a specific story about
some guy finds that his wife was having an affair, so he goes after her with a flaming sword. I think that's kind of where it is. What did you think about it? No, I think that's more important.
The thing is like it seemed like almost like a bit of a romance or something. Like, you know, didn't I start the fire? I put the work in, mm-hmm. and did I see it become something, mm-hmm. or not?
I believe that's kind of what it was for him. But if it's what you think, that's what's more important. I
definitely keep to the original inflection, even though I didn't write the words to that one. I do keep to the original inflection. And there was several years back where I was still writing and performing as Black Cat Moan. And it was blues derivative. And the blues can get really sad. You know what I mean? You can get into murder ballads and such. You know what I mean? And
Yeah, are you not familiar with Murder?
I don't think I've heard of Murder.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's a bit of history, but that's not me. And I always said, you know, I wanted to bring the bliss of the blues, and it's that, you know, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. There is no bad; it's only lessons in life. And so, like, I made this vow to always have a positive. Look, all of my son, I will leave nothing behind that is a negative. That's somebody that I could learn. Oh my God, they listened to that before they killed themselves. Bullshit. Do you know what I mean? Like, that is nothing I ever want to put out into the world. So even taking somebody else's lyrics, I will always infuse it with a little sexuality, a little smut. Yes, there is a relationship in there. Yes, I turned it positive. Yes, you know, even lay down with your loving.
Yeah, lay beside your loving war. Didn't I see you go?
Right. And so I will always even utilize that as lay down your loving war. Well, I've had loving war in bed, you know.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Where it is that challenge, and you challenge each other to do something fantastic. And didn't I see you go? Well, I mean, everybody goes off.
Yeah.
You know, at some point. So, like, I really do read.
There's almost a celebration in it.
Correct.
It's
I that's what I always try and deliver when I sing or when I emote, is that positive, erotic spin of celebration of life.
Yeah, I mean, it
the esoteric talks. and like if you go through all the lyrics, they're always very esoteric. They're very nonlinear, but they're always, I always make it a point, you know, that it is you will find the best in this activity, in yourself.
Yeah, it got me through my breakup, I guess you could call it.
Mm.
It was very therapeutic. I very enjoyed it because it kind of let me feel, but also like kind of celebrate that resilience.
Yes.
And it really is, you know, I think that's a good point to leave on, that celebration of resilience, not just through relationships, any relationship for that matter. There is a resilience in being able to see yourself out on the other side.
I think that's a good, this would a comedian would call this is the callback.
Yeah.
If you recall how this conversation all started, it is the resilience to, in your relationship with yourself, that you have to leave behind and move forward in order to carry on and continue. And that's the life of a healthy mind. And that's the blessing and the curse of the artist that we all happen to be in this room. But that life, live life as art. And be immortal.
That's, yeah, you can't. Anything else?
I don't want to say anything after that.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
Yeah, that's the mic drop.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Love you, Caleb. It was great.
Thank you.
Yay, you're wonderful.
All right. So that happened. Grab a great cup of coffee anywhere else. Try the mung juice or whatever we're going to call it. And stay tuned for the next episode of Caffeinated Connections. Take care, guys.
Be well.
That was so much fun.
That was awesome.